The modern globalist crime syndicate and the financial oligarchy that operates and controls the illegal drug trade has its origins in the early 18th century via the British East India Company, or BEIC, one of the most evil entities to have ever left its mark on the world. The BEIC was the vehicle in which London trafficked drugs to China and around the world. Through the Grand Lodge of England, the BEIC set up Masonic lodges in India around the same time they set up lodges in pre-revolutionary America. The first Masonic lodge in India, created in the year 1729, was in fact called Lodge East India Arms No. 72 and carried the BEIC coat of arms. During the next several decades, Masonic lodges were strategically set up at trading sites in India and China to more easily transport opium. By the early 18th century, China became the first drug market for London. The Chinese emperor, outraged that his population became doped up buffoons after decades of opium addiction, attempted to eliminate the opium trade altogether, at first issuing out edicts and prohibitions, then even penalties of death by strangulation. It was all to no avail. As this famous cartoon from the year 1839 illustrates, the British doped the Chinese into oblivion, ultimately sapping the country of its vitality and decimating its army during the two 19th century opium wars. Out of the two opium wars, the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank Corporation, better known as HSBC, was formed in the year 1865. Opium traders operating through the British East India Company became the founding members of HSBC. HSBC became the clearinghouse for all financial transactions relating to the black market in opium and its heroin derivative, and became the central hub for drug trafficking. With the headquarters now located in London, the HSBC currently prints 75% of Hong Kong's currency. British Freemason Cecil Rhodes Standard Chartered Bank prints the rest. With the advent of HSBC, the British East India Company was no longer needed, as the bank became a more effective way of handling dirty money. The BEIC dissolved just 7 years after the foundation of HSBC. The relationship between Freemasonry and the British East India Company proved to be the mechanism in which the opium trade would be possible. Thus was established the beginning of the Masonic network and the illegal drug trade. The opium trade was set up through a triangular trade system between the British, India, and China during the 18th century. According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, Britain undertook the opium trade because of their chronic trade imbalance with China. There was a tremendous demand in Europe for Chinese tea and silks, but there was correspondingly little demand in China for Europe's manufactured goods and other trade items. The opium trade, which created a steady demand among Chinese addicts imported by the West, solved this chronic trade imbalance. In India, farmers produced the largest opium crop in the world. There were three main British stations for trade in India: Bengal, Madras, and Bombay. At least one Masonic lodge was strategically positioned at each site. Lodge No. 222 was established in Bengal in 1740. A Madras lodge was established in 1752, as was the Provincial Grand Lodge of Madras. In 1758, Lodge No. 234 was established in Bombay. From the 18th century to the 19th century, the British Masonic network grew tenfold in India. During the 1750s, the British East India Company took full control over opium-growing districts in India. Journalist Simon Deschamps explains, quote, "Masonry became so entrenched in trading that provincial Masonic lodges eventually resorted to bills of exchange as a means to convey the members' fees to the Grand Lodge of England from 1772 onward. Bills of exchange were the traditional means of payment for most trading transactions," unquote. So how did these Masonic networks function? According to Builders of Empire by Jessica Harlan Jacobs, Masons gave out Masonic certificates, which worked much like a foreign passport, Thus, through his certificate, a Mason can effectively travel the Masonic network wherever a lodge exists. Writing in the year 1867 under the auspices of a Grand Masonic Lodge, one Mason arrogantly explains how the Masonic network works, quote, "Not only do we know no north, no south, no east, and no west, but we know no government save our own. To every government save that of Masonry, and to each and all alike, we are foreigners. And this form of government is neither pontifical, autocratic, monarchical, republican, democratic, nor despotic. It is a government per se, and that government is Masonic. We are a nation of men only bound to each other by Masonic ties as citizens of the world. And that world is the world of Masonry. Brethren to each other, all the world over, foreigners to all the world beside." British Masonic lodges were established in India well into the 19th century to further British trading ambitions. Eastern Star Lodge No. 95 was opened in 1802 in the interest of the Honorable East India Company's Navy. As Deschamps continues, "Soon the Masons in India became adept at channeling information back to the motherland, acting as news dispatchers." Deschamps continues, "The merchants of the East India Company could count on Masonic membership to facilitate their economic and social integration at home and in India, wherever their trading adventures took them." Unquote. Masonically controlled opium trading ventures would extend all the way to pre- and post-revolutionary America. Now recall that the British planted lodges in India at the same time the British planted lodges in America. America soon found itself wrapped in British East India Company's trading scheme. And here's how. The BEIC received tea, spices, and silks from China in return for fabrics manufactured from cotton grown on the southern plantations in the newly colonized Americas. As ships sailed on the return from China, they dropped anchor off the coast of Africa to board captured blacks who they would sell as slaves to work the cotton fields on the east coast of America. During the 19th century, the Chinese emperor had enough of the opium traffic to the point he confiscated and burned 20,000 chests of opium in the year 1830. The only way now for London to profit off of opium was to win the right through war. According to author John Daniel, quote, "In preparation for the war, the BEIC opened in 1839 its first Masonic lodge at Basra, present-day southern Iraq, to function as a center for Great Britain's intelligence operations under the guise of pan-Islamism. Over the next three decades, intelligence lodges were established at every port where the BEIC landed. These British Masonic outposts served to control the movement of drug traffic to the West." Unquote. The first Opium War started in the year 1839 and the second in 1856. Both were under the command of High Freemason Lord Palmerston. Lord Palmerston was considered at the time to be the High Patriarch of Freemasonry, mainly for his interactions with a multitude of underground revolutionary secret societies. From the authors of Dope Inc., quote, "Palmerston's irregulars employed in illegal dope trafficking, assassinations, and fifth column subversions against the United States in the period before and during the Civil War are the linear ancestors of what is now called organized crime. The Chinese triads, the Order of Zion, and its American spin-off, the B'nai B'rith, Young Italy, whose Sicilian law enforcement arm became known as the Mafia, the Jesuit order based in decaying Habsburg, Austria, Mikhail Bakunin's bomb-throwing anarchist gangs, and nearly every other inhabitant of Britain's political netherworld followed a chain of command that led through the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry directly to Lord Palmerston and his successors." Unquote.
The legacy of British Freemasonic treachery against the Union survived intact, including the B'nai B'rith. Although the slave trade nominally was banned in the United States as a result of Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, a new form of slavery had already been launched by the British East India Company and its Scottish Rite directors, including the same Lord Palmerston who had played so pivotal a role in the secessionist insurrection.